The Escape Pod. Let's go on a trip through time to see what tomorrow will look like yesterday.
Preparing escape pod for launch.
Today was yesterday's tomorrow. Where we are now used to be the unimaginable future. And today's outdated entertainment used to be yesterday's state of the art. Sifting through science fact and science fiction, from outdated technology to the birth of the future. Let's get away from it all for a few minutes by going back the way we came, into logbook.com's escape pod. The flight of the logbook.com's escape pod continues through all things fantastic, futuristic, and flat-out geeky. I'm Earl Green, and we'll head 'em off at the past, seeing what tomorrow looked like yesterday. On this day in 1980, construction began on what NASA considered to be the fourth and final shuttle in its space shuttle fleet, Atlantis. Improvements and experience in building the shuttles since the 1970s paid off for NASA, with Atlantis weighing in at 3 tons lighter than Space Shuttle Columbia. In 1982, with weather unsuitable for a landing at either Kennedy Space Center or Edwards Air Force Base, Columbia had to make its one and only landing at White Sands, New Mexico.
Mutual news. The winds of March will be the final arbiter for the Columbia Space Shuttle landing. White Sands, New Mexico is highly probable at this hour. Mutual correspondent Jim Slade is at the Kennedy Space Center with an update.
Everything seems set for putting Columbia on the ground. Technicians who handle the ship shortly after it comes to a stop on the runway have taken their places. Astronaut John Young, flying a training plane into and out of the White Sands missile range, reports good conditions for the landing. The astronauts aboard the ship are in their seats, watching the computers work up the spacecraft toward the engine burn which will start their descent. That will take place at 10:13 Eastern Time, somewhere between Australia and Hawaii. If they continue on this course, the shuttle will touch down on the White Sands Strip at 11:05 Eastern.
And we should be
getting a little bit of a monitoring picture.
My colleague David Dowell at White Sands is waiting as she comes in.
Reed, we have Columbia in sight, now crossing toward the north end of the runway. Columbia is more than 12 miles away, so the sound booms, if we're going to hear them, ship will not reach us for about a minute. Unlike Edwards, Columbia must hit the runway here. Edwards, a broad, dry lake, you can land almost anywhere. Here, they must hit the runway, about 300 feet wide.
13 miles range.
35,000 feet long.
That's 210 miles.
That's 295 knots. Something just over 300 miles an hour.
By getting in wind, 190.
Yeah, we hear the booms. We hear the booms in the distance.
630.
Columbia now on a
trail.
Roger. Deep glide, making its approach to runway 17, a runway running practically due south here.
5,000 feet.
Let's listen to mission control for just a moment.
Free fire here.
Roger.
1,000 feet.
Here it is down.
Columbia had to be cleaned extensively since the airborne powdered gypsum that gives White Sands its name had gotten into every opening possible. Even if you're a space shuttle, sand goes everywhere. The 13th crew of the International Space Station lifted off in a Soyuz capsule today in 2006. Moody Blues drummer and poet-in-residence Graham Edge was born on this day in 1941. Actor Kenneth Welch, best known for appearing in David Lynch's Twin Peaks, was born today in 1942. In 1967, while most viewers suffered through the Star Trek episode The Alternative Factor, things were going wrong behind the scenes as Leonard Nimoy's agent demanded a fairly big raise for his client, claiming that Star Trek's success was down entirely to Nimoy's portrayal of Spock. The producers of Star Trek panicked and started looking for a replacement for Nimoy, even considering Mark Leonard, who would later appear as Spock's father Sarek in the second season. Eventually, it was discovered that Nimoy himself was not in the loop on the demand for more money, and things were settled in a more logical manner.
Totally illogical.
In 2005, though, fans of the just-revived Doctor Who weren't so lucky. Actor Christopher Eccleston announced he was giving up the role of the Doctor, who would only last one season, and the first episode of that season had aired only a few days before.
Right then, I'll be off.
In 1984, Activision released Hero for the Atari 2600, short for Helicopter Emergency Rescue Operation. This popular game gave players control of a jetpack-wearing rescuer trying to free hostages from underground caverns crawling with spiders and other creatures. In 1985, Doctor Who's 22nd season ended on an uncertain note as the show went into deep freeze for over a year, the longest break Doctor Who had ever taken in its history up to that point. The show had nearly been cancelled by the BBC brass and was definitely on trial, which gave the show's producers and writers an idea of what to do with the following season. You can read about these events and many more on thelogbook.com's ever-evolving timeline of geek history. Thelogbook.com's expanded guide to Doctor Who on TV from 1963 through 2011, 4.1 second edition, is now available. Over 400 pages catching you up on the time-traveling mythology of the longest-running science fiction series in TV history. You can get it in print or ebook form. You can pick up other original books, ebooks, and videos, and hundreds of other titles in the logbook.com store anytime. Thanks for listening to the Escape Pod.
Commencing Escape Pod with the Prone Seeker. The logbook.com Escape Pod was written and prone to by Earl Payne.